This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Lisa Christine is a humanitarian photographer who specializes in indigenous peoples worldwide. She uses her powerful images and intimate portrayals to raise awareness about social causes such as modern slavery. As part of its mission to advance freedom and fight slavery and human trafficking, the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center invited Lisa Christine to Cincinnati to open her exhibit Enslaved, a visual story of modern-day slavery. Lisa Christine and National Underground Railroad Freedom Center Executive Vice President and Provost Dr. Michael Battle join us this afternoon to discuss human trafficking and Lisa's exhibit. And Lisa and Michael, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
It's a pleasure being with you.
Pleasure.
Michael, how many people around the world, how big a problem is this? How many people find themselves trapped in slavery these days?
Slavery is an enormous problem worldwide. There are more persons in slavery now than were in slavery during the time of the transatlantic slavery. It is difficult to put an exact number because there's so much underreporting of slavery. Because slavery includes not only people who are forced into prostitution and sex slavery, which is what most people think about, but it's the people who are forced to work as Lisa's portraits capture, people who are forced as children's soldiers, people who are in sweat camps over the world, domestic servitude. It is just a huge number of persons. And what is worse is the amount of money that is produced illegally by slave trade. That's something that we have to put a stop to.
Well, how much is produced?
It's about $150 billion a year.
$150 billion
with the B per year. An underground illegal economy on the backs of people, mostly young people and women, all over the world, every culture, even in these United States of America, there are people who are captured by some form of modern-day slavery.
You know, and to put that in perspective, I think Apple, its entire corporate profit for all of last year was $53 billion. Yeah. And you're talking about something that generates $150 billion. As far as the numbers, though, I've seen anywhere from 27 to 30 million, Michael.
Million
is that,
yes.
Yeah, is that pretty reasonable?
That's a pretty reasonable number, as long as we understand that it is a number that no one knows for certain because much of slavery is underreported and some is not reported at all. When you look at some of the images that Lisa captures, people who are working in gold mines, who are working in fields all over the world, trapped in ungodly scenes of mud and debris, who are never counted by anyone, but are captured by her. And that, I think, is the brilliance of what she is presenting at the Freedom Center.
Lisa, how widespread is slavery around the world?
Well, slavery, interestingly, is illegal in virtually every country in the world, and yet it exists in pretty much every country in the world.
Are there certain countries where it's more of a problem than others?
Well, I know from my experience when I served as a U.S. ambassador, I was very much involved with dealing with the slave trade that goes on the African continent, particularly that horrible triangle of slavery, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Sudan, Egypt, and other parts of the African continent. What goes on in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where people are forced to work. And some of the images from the DRC and Ghana are captured in Lisa's work as well. But it's not just Africa. It's Asia. It's North America, South America, Central America. It's everywhere. And it's something that all of us know is wrong. Everybody knows it is wrong, yet it is unfortunately tolerated by too many people who act as if slavery did not exist.
Lisa, how many different countries did you go to put this exhibit together?
The countries that I have returned to document slavery have been, well, the United States.
Yeah, it's still
Haiti.
A big problem here.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. Nepal and India and Ghana. You know, the project can really be produced anywhere. There's just slavery that is rampant all over the world. And in fact, back to that $150 billion industry, It's the second fastest growing criminal industry in the world, just following drugs. And it's estimated, I believe, that within 5 years, it's supposed to be number one.
And the sad thing coupled with that is that normally slave trade is tied in with trafficking in drugs, trafficking in arms, and in some instances worldwide, it is tied in with the support of terrorist networks. In the U.S., it is tied in, particularly the sex trade, with drug trafficking and gang behavior. So you have this web of horror that surrounds modern-day slavery that we need to fight. Then you couple that with the money laundering that is going on. It is devastating to economies all over this world, including the economies of the United States.
Yeah, it's really hard to believe that this is still going on in this day and age. How much awareness is there of the evil of slavery that it still poses these days?
It's interesting, really, because when I started this project in 2009. You know, I've been documenting indigenous people around the world for more than 30 years in 100 and something countries. In 2009, when I was exhibiting that particular work at a World Peace Summit in Vancouver with the Dalai Lama and other Nobel laureates, that's when I learned about slavery. Because I knew, much like many people, that there was these little bits of trafficking that I assumed were either with sex or with the making of carpets and textiles. But it was there that I was staggered by the information that slavery exists in such a pronounced way. At that time, 27 million, as you said, double the amount of people taken from Africa during the whole Atlantic slave trade put together. It's sort of this epidemic that is just growing. It's just staggering.
So you were surprised when you launched into this project and found out how vast a problem this is.
Yes. And when I began, the reason I began is because I didn't know. And I thought, well, if I don't know, my whole occupation is based on observing people. Well, then how many other people don't? And over the course of these last years, it's come in largely into more of a common framework. I mean, I think they recently did a poll that showed that 80 or 85% of Americans are aware that slavery exists. Now, that was non-existent back in 2009.
You know, we have on one of our websites, In Slavery Now, we get 40,000 people every month who click onto that website out of curiosity. But of that 40,000, only 1,000 per month actually sign on to do something about it. And that, I think, is part of the tragedy. A lot of people are aware, but choose not to go from awareness to action. And what I am absolutely certain of, with no fear of contradiction whatsoever, is that when people see Lisa's work, they will be touched in such a way that it would be very hard for them to leave that exhibition not motivated to take action. And her exhibition will help us get to the point that more people will take action as opposed to being aware, because awareness is one level. We want people to do something about it. And your work, Lisa, will get people to that point.
So, Lisa, obviously it is going to motivate people when they see this. I'm sure they can't help but be touched by the pictures that they're seeing. Do you give specific suggestions and advice on things that people can do to counter modern-day slavery?
Yes, in fact, the exhibition ends with a long table that allows people to take action, that allows people to sign. Can you tell us about some of those that you've created?
Each person, when they leave the exhibit, they will be able to pick up a card. And on that card, there is a phone number that a person can call to indicate that they want to get involved. And then there's a big mirror. And so we're asking people to take a selfie of themselves holding the card up so that when they leave, they will be able to share that with other people on Facebook and Twitter and other places to spread the word. And now when people plug into our End Slavery Now website at the Freedom Center, there's a list of dozens of options of what people can do to get involved in the fight against slavery, whether it's joining with the farmers who are forced to work in the lettuce fields in our country at little to no pay, or to join in to fight against some of the textile industry, or to sign petitions against some of the grocery store chains. Unfortunately, Kroger is one of them, and Publix grocery store is another one that where they have not taken the action to decide no longer to carry products that are produced by slaves. So there are a lot of things that people can do, but this particular exhibit itself will allow people to pick a card up, carry it with them, read it as they leave, and to become committed to take some positive action. But everybody should come and take a selfie of themselves holding that card.
Absolutely.
Michael, what do you think are some of the contributing factors that are causing slavery to continue to be such a problem?
It is the same factor that allowed American slavery to continue as long as it did. As long as people are making money off of the slave trade, slavery unfortunately persists. I would like to think that it was the moral consciousness that pricked the American soul to end slavery. The reality is that it wasn't the moral consciousness alone. It was the fact that the economy of having slaves to produce cotton was no longer economically feasible because the cotton gin was created. Andrew Young, former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, said, until we can find a way to take the money out of slavery, slavery, unfortunately, will continue to exist. We have to find ways to capture that $150 billion, make it not profitable for people to engage, because a lot of so-called honest people are profiting off of slavery every day, and we have
whether
to find a way.
Whether they realize it or not.
Whether they realize it or not, and most not realizing it, but Johns who drive down the street and pick up a young teenage girl, they know that they're profiting off of slavery in most instances. People who hire people in factories and work at little to no money know that they're profiting off of slavery. When you go to a country that the country's army is made up of children fighting wars, you know they profit off of slavery. And we have to find a way to disincentivize people who are profiting off of slavery. If they see Lisa's work, they can no longer go away having been unpricked in their consciousness.
You know, and I should say, too, that I think one of the reasons that slavery persists is because it's hidden in plain sight. We all unknowingly participate in slavery. Probably all of us here may have some garment on that has some type of slavery involved in the process of making it, whether it's the people that are making the garments, or maybe that factory is built in a building that was made from bricks that were made by slaves. Like, part of the reason that it's so difficult to kick out of the supply chains is because it's like an onion. There's so many layers to it. And I think that most people, for example, that buy fish know who they're buying it from, but maybe they don't know where those people are getting it from. And so there's this long chain of possibility of having the practice of slavery involved in it. And when it's so hidden in plain sight, it's much more difficult to really see. You know, it's not like red paint on the wall. You could go to a restaurant and have somebody serving you who, under our common assumption, would be in our mind being paid, but actually many people aren't being paid, and they're being held against their will and without their passports and without receiving money and without the freedom to walk away.
So let's talk about Enslaved. How did you go about putting the exhibit together? How much work was involved in that?
Well, it was a tremendous amount of work documenting slavery all over the world. Much of this body of work, though not all of it, was created in collaboration with Free the Slaves. They have partners who work work around the world and are indigenous from that particular country. And so when I would fly in, I would work with very particular abolitionists in that vicinity under that particular type of slavery. For example, working in illegal gold mines in Ghana, I would meet with a particular group of people. And they were the people that brought me in. They were my guardians. They were the people were able to reach those individuals and had relationships built with them. And almost the entire body of work, of which there's, I believe, 54 pieces in the exhibition, the whole body of work was made in tiny little periods of time, like between 10 and 20 minutes, because it was dangerous for me to be there, and I could only be there when the slaveholders were away and the moneylenders were removed. So it was very strategically put together by these fine abolitionists.
How much risk were you at doing this? I mean, did you ever feel like you weren't safe doing this project?
Most certainly, yeah. I think that while I was doing the work, I was sort of driven with this unrest that this was occurring in the world, and I wanted to shine a light on it. But when I look back on the situations that I was in, I do think, oh, my gosh. I mean, there was times when I had to hide inside of a mine shaft and run and drive away from areas. And, you know, it's no easy thing to document things that people don't want you to see.
Tell us some of the images that you've got. Images of children in this. I think one of the great images is the young boy Kofi from Ghana, who was enslaved, but now he's free, which is a really amazing picture. Tell us about those pictures.
Well, there's a lovely boy named Kofi who had been basically taken from his family, who the traffickers had lied to, and brought hundreds of miles away to the largest man-made lake in the world called Lake Volta. The image was made after he had been rescued by abolitionists on the ground and brought to a safe house where children and people in general are sort of rehumanized again. So the image was made when he was actually bathing at the well in the back, pouring these big buckets of water over his head. He was such a beautiful kid. But the beautiful thing is, like as we're speaking here today, is that he's been reunited with his actual parents, which is pretty astonishing.
That is amazing.
And that's the goodwill of people, experts in the field that are able to really make a difference. Yeah, it's marvelous.
How old was Kofi when he was freed?
We estimated that he was probably about 6.
Oh, wow.
And they love children on Lake Volta in the fishing villages because their hands are so small and nimble, and they're able to pull out little knots and debris from the fishing nets.
You're talking about organizations and people who are working to free slaves around the world. You mentioned Free the Slaves is one of those organizations. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Free the Slaves originally was focused on liberating often entire villages. And currently they have a project on Indiegogo, actually, where they're trying to liberate 55 different villages. Now they're largely working around preventative measures to not have slavery happen, which is actually very, you know, clever, because there's a lot of reasons that slavery occurs and it is avoidable. There's all these wonderful organizations that work in different ends. For example, IJM works completely on the legal side and has attorneys and law enforcement that helps to eradicate slavery. And I love that each organization has its own particular bent toward helping to be rid of the problem.
Another image on the poster for the enslaved exhibit, you used an image, I believe it's of a silk dyer.
Yes.
Tell us about that one. That's an interesting picture.
Yes, there was a group of silk dyers that I met in India, and the entire family was enslaved in silk dyeing. So they have all this raw silk that they submerge into huge barrels of like an indigo dye or a red dye, and they submerge their arms with holding the silk up to their, you know, past their elbows. And this dye is toxic. And they, from, you know, morning till night, 12, 15 hours a day, only dye fabrics. There is one image in the exhibition where you see three pairs of hands. And it's a family portrait. The black hands are the father, and the red and the blue are the sons.
Tell us about some of the other images. Was there any one in particular that struck you the most when you were taking it?
You know, it's interesting because each and every image sort of burns in my mind continually. But being in the brick kilns in Nepal and India was really like walking back in time. It was like entering Dante's Inferno or ancient Egypt, where you see people working in 130 degrees Fahrenheit, stacking bricks repeatedly on their head, each one weighing more than 4 pounds, up to 18 at a time, walking from the kiln to trucks hundreds of yards away, placing them in the truck and then coming back, all without pause, mechanically working and covered in thick blankets of dust.
Now, you say something interesting, too, about your exhibit, that it's important to remember that it's not just images that we're looking at. We're looking at people.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit more about why you say that?
Well, you know, one of the missions of my work is to really generate a sense of community within the viewer and the person in the image. Because I think that there are so many images, journalistically speaking, that focus on atrocities in a really horrific way. Now, there's no way to make slavery beautiful. That would be silly. But I think what I find about my work is that no matter how dire the situation is, there in that person's soul, in their eyes, is this dignity. And that's what interests me, is their dignity. Because I think in that we can all relate to one another and want to lift a hand to make a difference. Because the truth is that if someone is enslaved, then we are somehow also enslaved.
Yeah, and going back to the image of the silk dyer,
yes,
Lisa, there was he was holding a lit candle. Was there some kind of symbolism in that?
Indeed. I did two things when I was in the field. I documented people in their forced slavery, and then I had also brought with me a big bunch of candles. And when it was safe for the people and safe for me, I would make these portraits of people holding a candle, a notion of bearing witness to them and being willing to hear their story and know their plight, so that perhaps people like all of us would want to raise a hand and make a difference. And it's called a Shine a Light series. And I have hundreds of portraits of people holding candles, and six in this exhibition.
It's so emotional what you did. How did you manage to do this? It had to be really tough to gather these pictures.
Yes, it is no small thing seeing the underbelly of societies all over the world, especially in trafficking, where you see how deeply organized they are. It's like a massive movement, and it's petrifying. And frankly, the things that I've, borne witness to have been really horrible. And how I sort of deal with it is relying on the greater girth of my work, which is largely about indigenous people, ancient peoples all over the world that are, subject to modernity changing them. And I have the privilege of meeting often with elders. And it's, to me, that's another form of dignity, is just seeing this beauty and all the gorgeous things about our world. And I have found that when I do work on the slavery subject, that I have to go do my other work, because it's that reminder that our world is beautiful and that we have to care for it. So it's important that I place emphasis on the slavery, but that slavery is not the only thing in the world. There is all this lovely beauty we have.
So you wanted to bring out the hope that was out there, not just focus on the negativity.
Indeed.
What's the big message that you want people to get from this, Lisa?
It's very simple. The message is, oh my gosh, I could see through this photograph, which transcends language because it's utterly visceral by its visual nature. I see this person, and I cannot stand here and not help this person. And there's a whole little table at the end that has multiple things that someone can do, and that to me is a very good beginning.
I agree. And when you look at the image of Kofi, it shows hope and glee. His face lights up, and you can see in his face a transformation from having been enslaved to now being able to start a new life as a free person. But people are not going to become free from slavery unless each and every one of us and each and every one of your listeners, all of us do our little bitty part to become inspired to end this atrocity that we know exists all over the world.
Now, Lisa and Michael, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Photographer Lisa Christine and National Underground Railroad Freedom Center Executive Vice President and Provost Dr. Michael Battle. Enslaved, A Visual Story of Modern-Day Slavery is now open at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. It runs through August the 31st, and there's a link to more information at wvxu.org.